Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Thank you so much, Dave Solomon, for that stunning voiced intro once again. Here we are Thursday. Oh my gosh, Thursday the 20, what? Is it the 26th? It's the 26th. Amazing. I hope you're doing so well today. So much has gone on in 2012. So much has gone on this week. My gracious. And you know what? We're just going to out flat celebrate music, celebrate jazz, and celebrate the many dimensions of jazz today, because that's what this show is all about. But especially when we go through these challenging times and folks that we love pass away and things happen to us that are completely unexpected, we just have to make sure that we balance the whole scenario out with some great music. We're going to do that today. Dr. Dawn Norfleet is with us. Wait till you hear her. Wait till you hear about her journey. And she will explain to us her PhD in ethnomusicology. Okay? Gesundheit, I know. We're going to talk to her next hour, and we're going to have some great music in the meantime. And as we like to do so often with the show, we like to start things off with a classic or a song that's perceived as such. And here we go with Art Farmer and Crawl Space on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. I'm
And I count off the days till we meet again. I can't wait anymore till I'm in your arms, till I look into your eyes, but we're worlds apart. How can I make you mine when you're 1,000 miles away? I try to get closer day by day, 1,000 miles away. I keep holding on. The first night we met, can't forget when you smiled. I was mesmerized. Saw the light in your eyes when I held you close. Nothing ever felt so right. Then we had to part. Left my heart far behind. Now you're 1,000 miles away. Trying to get closer day by day, 1,000 miles away. I keep holding on. The first light we met, can't forget when you smiled. I was mesmerized. Saw the light in your eyes. 1,000 miles away, 1,000 miles away. I try to get closer day by day, day by day. 1,000 miles away. I keep holding on. 1,000 miles away.
There he is, our Mr. Manicotti. Makes no sense unless you're on Facebook and know that is his name for his profile page. Slim Man, otherwise known as Slim Manicotti. And why shouldn't he call himself that? I just referred to him in a correspondence earlier today as the gourmet guru. He truly is. I don't know what is happening with all of those culinary talents that he has. He needs to do something, and when last we spoke, there was something in the works, possibly a show. So I am supposed to call him back after the show, and hopefully he'll let you know, because between now and the time that he is supposed to be at Ram's Head in Annapolis, he hopefully will be with us, either for a quick little blurb, depending on his time, or if he has the time to hang out with us and be a co-host and talk to the folks who are in the chat room. He is a trip. Slim Man, 1,000 miles away. His wonderful recent CD. And actually, the whole premise of the soiree, if you will, at Ram's Head in Annapolis on the 11th is because it's supposed to be a CD release party for his new live album. I haven't seen anybody have this much success with Kickstarter.com. That whole Kickstarter situation is so neat. but you have to know how to work it. And apparently Slim and all of us knew how to work it for him, because his goal was to get $4,000, and it looks like he got over $8,000. So I think he's set for the new live CD. We'll keep you posted. Tomorrow, Slim is going to be in San Antonio, and you can go to slimman.com to find out more about that. But we'll let you know by the time the next show rolls around with our guest, Allison Crockett, next Tuesday, the last day of the month, by the way. We'll let you know what's going on with Slim. Greg Adams, we heard from Burma Road back in 1995 from Hidden Agenda. GregAdamsMusic.com has more information on what's going on with him. I should tell you that he's going to be on the 3rd and 4th of August with East Bay Soul at Spaghettini's Jazz Club in Seal Beach. One of these days, maybe even when Slim is going to be there in mid-September, maybe we'll have a chance to fly out. That would be awesome. I heard from a little bird that possibly, because of the relationship he has with some of the guys in the band, most notably Paul Schaefer, Greg Adams might be spending a little time on the Letterman show very soon. We'll apprise you of that. That's very exciting. Oh, my God. That was a great collaboration, and I'm so happy that Paul and Greg are still friends, because there's something going on with Greg Adams. There really is. It's like he's going to have this second or third wind in his career. Watch. Watch as the story unfolds. Art Farmer, oh my gosh, from 1977, Crawl Space on CTI Records. Art on flugelhorn. He has also been known to play a flumpet, which I love. We'll talk to Cindy Bradley about that when she's on the show in the next several days. Also, know that on that particular track, I just love the fact that Art Farmer is still with us. Yeah, is he? No, he's not. Why did I get him confused with somebody else? That's why, because his birthday is coming up, and somebody else who is a legend is coming up in the show, and I always get Art Farmer confused with this other person. Art Farmer, 8/21/1928 to 10/4/1999. And Dave Grusin wrote that Crawl Space tune. I just love that. Just amazing, and he was on keyboards and arranged the track, and also on the CD, Jeremy Stagg on flute, Eric Gale on guitar, and the background of Art Farmer is just crazy. Lionel Hampton shared trumpet duties along with Clifford Brown and Quincy Jones in a rotation, worked with G.G. Grice, Horace Silver, you'll hear him in a little bit later on in the show, Jerry Mulligan, Benny Golson. Just amazing work, and one of those, and I love to make sure that these guys get focus, some of those unsung heroes whose work you appreciate after the fact. At the time they were with us, though, you just didn't gravitate. And even Sarah Vaughan, who you'll hear a little bit later on, she had that happen to her. And a fascinating story is in association with Sarah in regard to a particular song I'm going to play for you. Hopefully we'll have time to do that. Dawn Norfleet is coming up with us the top of next hour. And, man, just so exciting what she is doing. You talk about hybrid jazz. She knows a thing or two about that. And if we just had an hour to talk about her degrees, it would be something else, because she is quite the scholar. You'll hear all about it. This lady, so happy to know about the breathtaking work at the age of 33 that Tineke Postma has done as a composer and saxophonist and educator. Check this out. This is just from last year, The Dawn of Light, a track called The Observer on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you.
It's a Saturday night. You check the TV, yeah. And pray the black and white can keep you satisfied. Well, she had a yellow hair. She had
says, I think that it would probably be interesting to have a discussion with him about how he classifies himself, but he has always been, even though he has been involved in country, alternative country, folk, a myriad of other styles and genres that folks would attribute to him, he will always be a jazz singer to me. Lyle Lovett, from 1987, if you can believe it. Before T was born, before my son was born, Lyle Lovett. I can't tell you how many times I've seen him, and whenever he goes into this mode, he's just so unique. Nobody else like him, except for a gentleman that he really aspired to be like when Lyle was young. Walter Hyatt is no longer with us. Walter was one of those souls that went down in the Everglades crash that was in the mid-90s. And the last person that Walter spoke to before he boarded the plane was Lyle Lovett. That's how tight they were. Lyle even got the idea for his hair from Walter Hyatt. Walter had a great band called Uncle Walt's Band that was huge in Austin, Texas, and actually in South Carolina as well, and in Nashville. Huge following in Nashville. And man, there are stories about Walter Hyatt. I was blessed to be able to meet him because when I was working in alternative country radio in Nashville, he came to be interviewed one night, and it was special. He walked into a room, and you knew that it was something wonderful. He just had that vibe. And, man, I know even after all these years, Lyle must still pine for him because a lot of folks do, especially in Nashville. But back to Lyle, Black and Blue from Pontiac. On that particular CD, by the way, jeez, so many great folks. Edgar Meyer on double bass, Francine Reed on vocals, Emmylou Harris, Vince Gill. That boy from Klein, Texas did real good. Actor, composer, musician, singer. Also on Pontiac, by the way, If I Had a Boat. Some of folks that I know through the years have claimed that as one of their favorite songs. She's Hot to Go. And the song that we just dropped our jaws over when he decided to release that as a single, She's No Lady, She's My Wife. He kills me. He's going to be at the Lyric in Baltimore on August the 4th, and my golly, does he ever have a busy schedule. LyleLovett.com has more. Stanley Jordan, capital J, from Friends. Man, that is so choice. 1985, just about the time Lyle was making music for the first time, so was Stanley Jordan. That's when he began his musical journey. On Mack Avenue, and Mack Avenue just wants Stanley to take it and run, and so he did. Had a bunch of folks on here that are just astounding, among them Charlie Hunter, Christian McBride, Bucky Pizzarelli, Nicholas Payton, Russell Malone, Kenny Garrett on that sax piece on that song, and just real solid, creative, fluid, inspired Stanley Jordan music. He's very unique. If you've ever seen him do his thing, many times solo, I don't know how he does it, but he does. He plays two instruments at once. Don't make me explain. You have to go see him. Whew. We heard, too, from Kali Tineke Postma from the Netherlands, The Observer from the Dawn of Light, her fifth CD. She's 33 years old. Whew. Her particular website has a lot more information. T as in Tom, I, N as in Nancy, E-K-E, Postma. And she has quite a schedule in front of her, too, doing a tour of Sweden with one of her mentors, Terry Lynn Carrington, who thinks the world of her. Tineke is also going to be in South Africa. And in Woodstock, I'm assuming that's Woodstock, New York. That's going to be real hot at the Bearsville Theater. So hopefully she'll be coming this way. Very interesting to see this slip of a blonde girl holding a saxophone and having such power. She's pretty doggone amazing. And speaking of which, Dr. Dawn Norfleet is as well. Just a breathtaking ride she has had in music, and we're going to hear a lot about it. She's got three songs, and I have to ask her, folks will remind me to do that. I think it'll come up anyway, but she has had this CD in the works for a while, and I believe that she has the title chosen. I got sent two CDs in the mail, and we need to clear up the confusion about when the CD is going to drop so you can go to her website and pick it up. Just a whole bunch of different kinds of influences come into play when we're talking about Dawn Norfleet. And she got my attention on Facebook, just saw what she was doing, her background, and what her voice was like. Woo, it was really a rush. So I hope that you'll feel the same way, too. I think you will. Now, I don't know why this is, but I sometimes get Art Farmer confused with Horace Silver. I think there's something, when you look at the pictures, you might agree, there's something about the pictures of them together, and something just clicks. But Horace Silver is still with us. He's going to be 84 this year. I see that there are lots of tribute parties planned. Let us embrace the fact that he is alive and kicking and has turned out an absolute potpourri of greatness in his time. This is one of them. This is from another one of those unsung projects, In Pursuit of the 27th Man. We just heard Todd Marcus the other day do a little spin-off on that, In Pursuit of the 9th Man. But this is Horace Silver from back in 1973. Beautiful song from Brazilian extraction. This is called Kathy on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you.
mocha lattes.
Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy is the fact that you can put these mixes of music together. We started off with Horace Silver, then it was Wayman Tisdale, and then this beautiful lady, just some energized, joyful, I'm on top of the world music, something so ordinary, from a lady that I've had my eye on for a while, and my gosh, for more than one reason, not only a vocalist, but a composer, a scholar, self-taught musician, and a doctor of ethnomusicology. Would you please make welcome Dr. Dawn Norfleet? Dawn, you're finally here!
Hello. Hi. How are you? I'm so glad.
I'm great. I'm great. And listen, right off the bat, I apologize. I didn't recognize the number last night. You had called me, and I didn't see it until a little while ago, so I didn't get back to you. But thank God you knew the number. Bless your heart.
Oh. Well, sure. I understand.
Woo! Girl, that you are probably really excited at this point. Tell us about this new CD, because Something So Ordinary is going to be the title, right?
Leg of the project, that's I don't know what the title of the full project is going to be, but I thought this was like the most appropriate title.
Yeah. But you are certainly extraordinary, and I have to let these folks know in the chat room, certainly, and folks who are listening, your friends and fans, how did this journey start for you? It's pretty doggone fascinating because you're a California girl.
Yes. I was raised in California, in Los Angeles, Inglewood, to be exact. And I came from a musical family. My grandmother played Hammond B3, I guess, in a church. My mother
awesome.
And father had a duo, you know, back in the day. And they used to travel, and my mom played drums and sang, and my father played Hammond B3 organ and was an entertainer. My brother's a professional keyboardist, producer, vocalist, you name it. So I was just surrounded by music growing up. So I was the little sister that just absorbed everything. I was always around with the book, and nobody even knew it was musical until I came back, I think, from college and moved back to L.A. After grad school and a few years in New York. And then people were like, oh, you're a musician? Yeah, really? Okay. So,
and,
you know. Mm-hmm.
You know, Dawn, I have to say, though, That's quite a musical background, but the fact that you just not only brought that into your being and absorbed that on a day-to-day, but did your parents push you to be the educated person that you are, or did you just have a fire in your own belly for that?
Well, let's see. I wasn't supposed to be a musician, and I wasn't supposed to be a teacher. So, you know, my mom definitely wanted me to be what I wanted to be. You know, I'd gone through some career ideas. I thought I wanted to be an entertainment attorney. I thought I wanted to be a doctor of medicine until I realized I didn't like blood and icky things. And you know, I took ballet lessons and flag lessons, baton lessons, all of that. But, you know, music at the time was just kind of like a hobby. But the more I stayed with it, and especially in college, I got more into it. And just by my junior year, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I can do this. So it was a gradual process, and I started writing music when I was 15. So you know, that's been a journey. I always like to. I don't like to do stuff that's predictable.
I can dig it.
So I always like to throw a little monkey wrench in there or something like that for it to be fun, you know.
And didn't you say at one point, I think that I saw this in the way of a description that you had for what has transpired in your life, you're pretty an organic person. You like to let things flow as naturally as possible. I think I'm right on that. Am I?
Well, I don't know. Sometimes the organicness has to be forced. So, but I don't know. It's a balance, really. I mean, just like this project, it's definitely a hybrid project. It's not for the jazz police, and even though I consider myself to be
the jazz police,
yeah.
Oh my God, I love it.
Yeah, I was in the New York jazz scene for a while, and you know, it was when I was there in New York, it was a very, you know, traditional scene, and so I consider myself steeped in traditional jazz, but this particular project just reflects pretty much everything. You know, the jazz part, the funk, the unclassified, so the musicians I worked with, you know, I wanted to work with specific people and put them together or added them later on, as the case may be. You know, I just wanted it to reflect particular moods, even though the styles are very different between the songs. I just wanted to be each song to be the best representative of itself, whether it's, you know, I don't know, urban alternative, fusion, whatever. And you know, eventually I will do a jazz project. But this, I wanted each song to be whatever it was supposed to be, regardless of label or style or whatever.
And you know what, Dawn, I hear in your voice, it's not like an apology, but apparently, you know, you've gone through some folks that might have been negative as far as what your intention was with this particular project, or, you know, you're looking over your shoulder to see if you're going to get approval. You don't need anybody's approval. You know, the fact of the matter is that there are some of us who are trying to save the freaking genre. And the way to save the genre is not to get confined in those lousy, I'll put you in the corner boxes that have made everybody miserable. So you need to do what Dawn needs to do. I mean, growing up in California, you probably heard so much. And when I first heard you, honestly, my thought of you was connected to what Pharoah Sanders was trying to do for a while. Because his vision was so world-encompassing. It wasn't confined to what domestic jazz was supposed to be, according to those police that you referred to. You are doing what is best for you. You can't possibly do something that is supposed to be when all of you is screaming inside to do what is honest.
Yes, well, you know, I also have a background in classical music. So, I mean, I just love working in different languages, basically. You know, I have about 10 years ago, I guess, now, I won an award for a classical composition that I wrote. So, you know, I just love the freedom and the flexibility of moving through genres and crossing genres and mixing things, just as long as it's organic. It's not like I sit down and I say, well, I am going to write a piece in 15/8, you know.
Exactly.
It's like I get the rhythm or the motive in my head or something like that, and then I try to break it down. It's like, okay, what is going on here? And just like the case, in the case of the title track of the song, Something So Ordinary, for the music geeks out there, it's got two time signatures. So basically it comes out in two different, like, odd feeling kind of things. And even then, it's not like I sat down and said, okay, I am going to write in this weird, in these two weird time signatures. It's just like that was the feel. And I thought, oh, this is, you know, it grooves in this way if I do it this way. And then, you know, for the music geeks, it's the two time signatures are 11, are in 11 and 7. And then the storyline is kind of like you meet somebody, you can meet somebody in something like so ordinary, like a 7-Eleven or Trader Joe's. So, and that person you don't speak to could be the person that could just change your life forever. So you have this like internal conversation, you know, with somebody who's just like across the aisle from you or whatever. And so I subtitled the song 7-Eleven so. For a couple of reasons. So, you know, I like my little games, and it's just fun for me.
I love that. And did that really happen?
Well, maybe not literally. I mean, songs, you know, the lyrics, they're taken from life without being life literally.
Yes.
So I might think of something and say, well, that could, yeah, I think I can expand that into a song or something that turns into a song, or I'll hear a story from a friend, or just be fascinated by sunsets. I love sunsets.
Mm-hmm.
And beaches and things, which was the inspiration for another song on the CD, which is called Rain.
Oh yeah, we're definitely going to hear that this hour. I really was taken with that song. It was a source of transportation for me, Dawn, because you definitely go into another place. It takes you out of where you are, and whatever is a source of serenity for you, you go there. So
that was
delightful.
That was
the
aim of the song. That's what I really wanted. I had a clear picture of the mood that I wanted to convey, and I'm glad it came through.
Oh yeah, some people get really upset with rain, but oh my gosh, if you were to just relax, it's not like, you know, we're being cavalier about this, because some people get rain all the time, and I know that's a bummer, but the rain, when it does come and you are in a frame of mind where you permit it to actually do some healing on you, oh, there's nothing like it.
Yes, and you know, rain in Los Angeles is a very special thing. You know, for a long time it didn't happen, and then a few years ago I think it was reintroduced. So, and then like, oh gosh, about 2 weeks ago we had rain in July.
I heard that.
It was nuts. I don't remember it ever raining in July, and it was a beautiful thing. I was just at a farmer's market, and I was just like looking up at the clouds, and I was laughing. Like, what are you doing? Just not drizzle, but like rain. but yeah, rain can be like water. It can be destructive. It can be healing, and it's all of that. And so, you know, I wanted to paint a picture of, you know, someone sitting in a window with rain basically kind of cascading down the window pane, and you're looking out at something, you know, looking out at the world, you know, through a window, and when it does rain here, it does affect my mood, and it just kind of causes me to be a little bit more pensive, I'd say, especially, you know, being in L.A. where it doesn't come that often.
Well, golly, since we're talking about it, we might as well play the song.
Okay.
Because now I'm jonesing for it, and I know that our chat room, which is it's pretty packed today, and I think that's attributable to you. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. And this is Dawn Northfleet, and working title of the CD, Something So Ordinary. This is the song that Dawn just told you about, called Rain, on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Back into the better sea, pondering on
I told you it would let you go somewhere else, and it did. Oh, Dawn Norfleet and Rain. So beautiful, Dawn. My gosh.
Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah. We had a little chatter back in the chat room about that and the folks who are speaking, because there are several guests that are just guests. But then we have folks in the chat room who have names. And Griselda and E are going back and forth saying, ooh, so nice.
I'm glad. It's not. Glad they like it.
You know, it's so funny. Sometimes this can be annoying, and I'm very sensitive about that, because whenever I talk to somebody on the show, I never want anyone to assume that there necessarily has to be an association to something else. But I have to say that with you, because of the variations in your music that culminate in these songs, it's like, and I knew that you were to a large extent an old soul, but there are so many pieces of the puzzle that are Dawn Norfleet that I remember that date back to before you were born. I hear music coming from you that I know that you couldn't have remembered because you weren't here yet.
I'd love an elaboration.
Well, you know, some of the I'll be 60 this year. And I remember that there were certain kinds of rock influences that crept into music back in the 60s. There were songs that we were listening to, like, for example, Harper's Bazaar and Spanky and Our Gang. And they certainly were considered to be rock acts, or maybe popular acts, rock pop. But they had a way of bringing in this this fusion, this classical fusion, or a softer stance on a guitar, or by the singing, they were able to make ordinary rock songs into little masterpieces.
Okay.
And that's what part of what you do reminds me of. There's so much more. But that particular song brought me right back to 1968.
Oh, thank you.
It was very cool. Oh, yeah. So how do you have this voice? How did you discover that you had this unbelievable voice that culminates in Doberman Pinschers coming to the door?
Well, it's been a work in progress, I should say. I started out in choirs, school choirs, you know. I really enjoyed small group ensembles more than big choirs and stuff. Like when I was at Wellesley, I was with this group called the Wellesley Widows.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yes, the Wellesley Widows. And I had always been a first soprano because I could always hit those high notes, you know, strong and pretty solid. But, you know, there was no opening in the Widows, since I think it was just maybe 12, 13 people in the group, and it was close harmony, so the only opening was for a second alto. So I'm like, oh, okay, so I have to really sing in this you know, low range, and that I think that's where I really started to develop my lower register. And and then, you know, out in the jazz world, I realized singing in the soprano realm really wasn't all that effective, I don't think. You know, people were more grabbed by altos and you know, more full-throated than, you know, singing, you know, a song or a thing. You know, so I just really learned to develop my full voice. So some expert had just sworn that I was truly an alto, you know, and like, but I was always a soprano, you know. So, but I just have a 3.5 octave range, so it's pretty wide, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my father was a baritone, my mom was a first soprano, so I guess I'm the result of that. On a different note, I also wanted to give credit to someone who really helped paint the picture of that song Rain, and that was Mud Skillings on bass. And you know, that the introduction of the song, you could really hear like these layered bass parts.
Mm.
Beautiful. Yeah, and I really love the textures that he created with the layering of the bass lines, and Go Kurosawa on guitar, and Myungo Jackson on percussion, and I was on the I was playing keyboards and doing all the vocals, but I just really loved the texturing that Muzz did with his bass arrangements.
Very, very thought provoking and sensitive, and it makes me really my appetite is so whetted for all of the music that I can possibly hear from you, because each tune is so different. We're going to get to, of course, we're going to get to Love Will Find You from the work, and that's another picture of you entirely. But each of these tunes that I've heard conveys a kind of joy, or at least there is some hope. So I guess you have come along at a really good time. I think that people are going to gravitate to you. There's something about you that is soaring. We need to hear music that just comes from someplace, and then it rises and it soars. Do you feel that? Did you understand that when you were writing these songs?
You know, I wanted it to. When things don't happen your way, sometimes you just have to do the best that you can and realize that, oh, okay, well, things didn't happen when I wanted them to. Now I have the time to make them, to really create something in my vision, since I have the time to do it slowly. I don't just have to put it out there. You know, and that's really what happened. There's a lot of detail that went into each of those songs, and you know, a lot of it had to do with the fact that I had to do a lot of things myself. Like I mixed the project myself, which meant that I had to learn the equipment, and you know, take lessons pretty much.
Go ahead. You mixed it. Good for you.
Yeah. And so, you know, but being also having been in the position of, you know, facing a lot of adversity regarding this project, it also put me in the position to be blessed with you know, collaboration with other people, like Greg Manning, who says hello, by the way.
Oh, God bless him.
Yeah.
Greg Manning, yes.
Yeah, he helped me a lot with the project, allowing me to record in his studio. And, you know, just some wonderful friends, Curtis Thompson and just Marcus Williams and people who just help me get the thing together, you know, like it wasn't just all, you know, out there, because sometimes you could just look at a project and just say, oh my gosh, or a project in the works and just look at all of these separate parts and just wonder, oh my gosh, how's this all going to get together? But you know, you just really have to have faith in yourself and see in the value of the project, you know.
Yes.
In the worthiness of it. And just keep going, because you know, I really wanted people to feel life in the songs, in my music, because that's not what a lot of people, at least I don't feel it in a lot of the music that is most easily accessible today. You know, a lot of it is programmed, then there's auto-tune, and then there's all of this, and I'm wondering, where's the spirit, where's the soul in all of this? And so, you know, I think that's where the organic thing comes in. You know,
yeah.
not that it's all acoustic and that it's just totally stripped of effects and all of that. It's more for me the spirit of it, you know, and the fact that it's not supposed to be any particular one genre, label, or style, or whatever, you know. I just wanted it to be organically spirit.
Well, and not only that, Dawn, but also you say that you wanted to breathe life into this project by the sheer subject matter that you've chosen. You're breathing life because as much of a music aficionado as I am, I can't listen to some artists because their tunes have a tendency to be down and hopeless. Hmm. And you come along and you can pick something that is like rain and choose it to be a source of life, as opposed to, oh, do we have to have another day of rain? You are definitely more than a half full person. You are looking at the whole doggone glass and going, boy, that is tasty.
Well, thank you. I mean, sometimes it's a message to myself, because it's like, you know, things don't always go the way you want it to, you know, and it's like, okay, now if I make music that reflects that kind of mood, then it's not really inspiring me to go on. And I respect, you know, music that's authentic, that may have, well, I should say music that seems to come from an authentic place to me, I should say, that may not be all that, you know, happy and positive and things. But, you know, this is what I was feeling for these particular songs. And I just wanted them to reflect something that was genuine. You know, it's not like, yeah, I can't promise that everything I will ever put out there will be, you know, happy.
Well, not to confuse you with Julie Andrews, that's for sure. You know, let's make that clear. But
sure.
you seem to have, because, well, I'll just say it. I think because of the fact that you're so highly educated, and because you have researched music so much, and you're so articulate about what you want to say, and because you seem to have been raised in an atmosphere that suggests that you're always going to be serene. No matter the circumstances that are challenging in front of you, you'll find a way to make the lemonade out of lemons.
I try. You know, that's always a work in progress, because there's so much junk out there. And so many things to be just annoyed by and angered by. And, you know, sometimes you just really have to choose to take the higher road, You know, and that's an exercise in itself.
Yes.
You know, and I choose to do that. Like when people are just like, you know, kind of nasty to me, I'm like, oh, why are you doing this? And, you know, like I said, I just have to take maybe on a regular basis, or at least once in a while, I just pray, like, God, please let me choose the higher road. Because being human, I anyone can drift off into the other direction. Sometimes you just want to curse somebody out.
And you know what? Once you start getting into the mode of that, just like lying, it's a little tricky. Boy, why am I revealing this? It's always tricky when you do it the first time, then it gets easier and easier. So
yeah.
It's just like taking the high road. Once you decide not to take the high road, it just becomes a way of life to keep on choosing the non-high road. And for those of us who have gotten into that a time or two in our lives, woo, going the other way, choosing to do what is cool, what is best for humanity, what is good for your soul, you stay in that prayerful mode, Dawn.
Thank you. Like I said, every day it's a choice. It is a choice. You know, I've had my my downs and my ups, and then it's like, well, you know what? In fact, I was going through a rough period, and I thought, I have a roof over my head. I have family that loves me. I have, you know, a refrigerator with some food in it.
Yep.
You know, and there are so many people around the world, around the block, who don't have what I have.
Yep.
And so I was thinking, well, you know what? What if I volunteered to help out people? And, you know, what if I went and, helped feed, you know, the hungry? And that didn't necessarily happen, but other opportunities for me to, volunteer and share my gifts and share what I know, you know, that really, really helped me keep my head above water in dark times.
That's
you know,
great,
and that's part of the life affirming process. You know, just giving back, even when you don't think you have a lot to give, you have something that somebody could use. You know, and that's how I really started, you know, getting into youth mentoring youth. It was helping them, but it sure was helping me.
And when did you start to get into that? Because I just love that you voiced that. Thank you for bringing that up.
Sure. I started teaching music, like performance programs, I'd say around maybe 98 when I was living in New York. And then I started directing a couple of programs at some charter schools, a couple of charter schools in LA. But as far as like volunteering and mentoring, I started doing that more in about 2010, and that kind of became like a sort of a mission. You know, I got involved with an NAACP program, a youth initiative called ACTSO, ACT-SO, and for the Beverly Hills Hollywood chapter. And so that's really brought a lot of joy, purpose in my life. You know, to know that, you know, when I was in the jazz scene more regularly, especially in New York, you'd hear musicians, the Cats, talk about, oh, you know, the folks don't mentor anymore, you know, where's jazz in the schools, and people don't respect jazz, and where's the audience, and all of that. So doing what I'm doing, you know, with this program and with the Music Center in LA and just different things, I just get to have an effect on the future of art, know, in addition to touching human lives, you know. And
I love it.
You know, encourage other people to do this kind of thing. Whatever it is that you can offer, there's something that anybody can offer.
Well, you know, let me ask you this, because part of your doctoral research in New York, you were actually journeying through the hip hop scene in New York, so
yes.
that you can, you know, you got your doctor. I love that little story, and I want you to tell me why that. But the question now is, did that light a fire underneath you when you saw different folks trying to make it in hip hop and the creativity involved?
Well, I should start out by saying, for one thing, I can't rap to save my life. I grew up. Yeah, I grew up with a band aesthetic, a funk aesthetic. You know, I grew up with bands rehearsing in the home. My brother's group, my older brother, was in bands since he was 12. You know, and they would practice at the house, and throughout my, you know, just my school years. So I didn't gravitate toward hip hop growing up. You know, in LA, it was still more of a live music scene, live band scene. And it wasn't until I was in New York, and I forgot how this happened, but I had the opportunity to work or observe a middle school, Wadley Middle School, I think it was in Harlem, and the rap and poetry class. So I just came to observe, and that's when I first learned that people were talking about something called hip-hop culture and that there was improvisation involved. And I'm like, what? This thing called freestyling? What? You know, people could put words together and create things that make sense on the spot. That's actually what drew me in, the improvisational aspect. And then I just became fascinated with this underground hip-hop scene in New York. And so I examined the role, what's the title of my dissertation? You know, the title is half the dissertation. It's called Hip-Hop Culture in New York City, The Role of Verbal Musical Performance in Defining a Community.
Wow.
I was looking at the underground hip-hop scene, but paying attention to MCs. And not necessarily the people that you'd hear on the radio all the time. In fact, very few. However, one of the coolest things that happened was I got to interview Q-Tip from A Tribe Called Quest.
Oh, man.
While they were recording Midnight Marauders.
I was really?
Video, yes, when they were recording that. So, you know, I got this cassette-taped interview and got to meet the engineer Bob Power, and just it was real cool and real cool.
Yeah,
and got to meet some very, very fascinating people. It just changed my life, just really changed my life, changed my aesthetic. Yeah, that was an incredible experience for sure.
And, you know, here you were seeing this middle school in Harlem, and you're learning about what these kids are doing as far as poetry and creativity. And you are supposed to come back to California and start doing what you do as far as sharing that experience. So I just love that. I love that.
Oh, thank you.
And yeah. I guess you do too, otherwise you wouldn't be doing it.
Well, you know, I do. You know, it's an up and down kind of existence, but really the journey is it's pretty fascinating. It really is. It really is, and it is a blessing to be able to do, to have done what I've done, and to be doing what I'm doing. So, you know, to go from, you know, like when I went to Columbia as a classical composer, you know, that's what my master is in, classical composition. And
wow.
Then I decided, I'd rather go into ethnomusicology. And then I did like a 180 and studied hip-hop culture, you know.
Okay, now that you've brought that up, could you define ethnomusicology for us?
Oh, gosh. Well, ethnomusicology, there are many definitions. But, you know, basically, it's the study of music and culture.
Study of music and culture. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. If you're studying ethnomusicology, you're studying something that tends to go on right now, like there are people actually doing it right now. So if you're going to study, you're going to look at techniques and things. So you're going to be taking anthropology, sociology, and stuff like that as well as your own field work, your own, you know, research in whatever group of people you're studying. So there are different types of musicology. Like you could decide, well, you know, I love the music of Duke Ellington, so I like the way there's something that really touches me about, let's say, Concerto for Cootie. So you could decide you want to look at the music of Duke Ellington, but that would probably take you into the realm of historical musicology, because then you're looking at, you know, archives and you know, historical information, and you're talking to people who knew Duke Ellington. You're dealing with history, things from the past and artifacts. So that's a big difference between ethnomusicology and what we call historical musicology. So.
And it reminded me of Dr. Yusuf Lateef, who's going to be 92 in October, by the way. Yes, because I don't know if he's still doing this or not, but up until recently he was teaching courses in auto-physio-psychic music.
Okay.
Yes. At the Manhattan School of Music. And, you know, I thought about you, and I thought, now that would be a pairing. Wouldn't that be cool to do some work with Dr. Yusuf Lateef and all of his experience that he's had? You know, you talk about not ever wanting to be boxed in. I mean, here he is, 92, Dawn.
Yeah.
And still going strong. You go to his website, and one of the pages on his website actually asks, if you want to hire Dr. Lateef, in what form would you like to hire him? Quartet, quintet, duet? Would you like him to talk?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
It's so awesome.
Yeah. Oh, I would love any kind of collaboration, any kind of, you know, project with Dr. Lateef. Oh, that would be wonderful. Any sort of association, so, yeah.
Well, now it's out there in the universe, so something's bound to happen.
Sounds good to me.
And how many instruments do you play? Because I know that you're pretty much self-taught. You're self-taught on the flute, are you not?
Well, I would say I was pretty much self-taught until college. Then I took lessons with Chris Kruger and Peter Standart at Wellesley, and then I spent a year at Wesleyan University. So I took 3 years of lessons. Then back on my own. So I'm not completely self-taught, I would say, but I was self-taught, you know, like basically when I, one of the hardest things that I had to do when I first started taking lessons was to unlearn all the bad habits I had taught myself.
Oh, okay.
Like
that is a point, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, playing the flute flat-fingered, and those who, you know, might play flute or clarinet, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. So yeah.
You play the piano. I mean, it just seems like every legitimate musician starts out on the piano.
Well, I was actually intimidated by the thing. Everybody in my family played it, and I just didn't understand it. It had 88 keys. I had two hands and one brain, and I'm supposed to figure out, you know. So the odd thing about it is the piano I play by ear. So the piano is like the most organic, like totally whatever nature crunchy thing that's about me, I would say. Like you set a two part invention in front of me, and I'll be like, oh, let's see. but yeah, I play the piano by ear. So you know, I don't really I don't really claim that as much. So flute, voice. I have played saxophone, but not in a while. So I played saxophone in high school. So I have a saxophone, but I stick pretty much to the flute, to the voice, and when I need to, piano.
And then we have to let folks know, then this is one of those moments, you know, you can't help yourself. You start to go, oh, wow, and you start to squeal at this, because I have this vision of you singing with Monica on The Tonight Show. How did that come to be?
Well, actually, I didn't sing. I played flute.
Did you really? Wow, that's even better.
Yes. It was a good friend of my brother. Like I said, my brother played with like so many major R&B musicians of the especially of the 80s and 90s. You name it, he's played with them. And I just moved back, and it turned out one of his friends who hired people for different TV shows said that Monica needed a flutist for one of her songs, the R&B superstar Monica. So it was the most lucrative seven notes I have ever played in my life. I don't care, Jazz Police. You can, you know.
That's right. You got to tell the truth.
Oh, man. We were like, and the trumpet players had one note. So I had more than them. So that was a blast. Two of the background vocalists were all also named Dawn, so that was pretty funny.
That's cool. Yeah. I think that Monica should do something with that. Monica and the Three Dawns.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. Hear that?
That is awesome. See, you know, it's so funny. It really does come down to the connections that you make in the business and people that you know, because it's not a matter of it being an unjust world. It really does come down to, who can I trust? Who do I know? Do you know somebody? Yes, I do. Well, that's wonderful. On the strength of your word, let's talk to this person. That's how things happen. You know?
Yeah, networking, definitely. Networking.
Yeah.
And mentoring, too. Networking, mentoring. And you know, putting yourself out there, taking the risk, having the faith that you have something worth listening to, something worth paying attention to.
That's
even
right.
Especially if it's different from whatever else is out there, you know. just having renewable faith too, especially in, like I said, when things don't go your way, renew. Every dawn brings a whole new day.
And that's real funny that your name is Dawn. You would know all about that. And let me tell you something, Dawn. When time goes forth, you know, you were talking before about mentoring, and I was thinking about the fruit of your labor. One of the people I thought of when you were discussing that was Nick Colleone. And you are going to see what Nick has seen through the years. Nick has been in many workshops, many seminars, been a teacher, a mentor for a lot of kids. When they come back to you when they're older and say, the difference in my life has been you, because now I've been so inspired that I feel confident enough to pursue music or whatever because you took the time to care about me, that means everything.
Oh, yes. It is really a joy when I see, you know, kids I've worked with go out there and just do things that I just didn't do when I was their age, you know, reaching greater heights. And one, the other thing that I hope they learn is that it's not about the stardom or the being a diva or Devo and the center of attention. I'm more concerned that they be balanced human beings.
Yes.
You know? And it's not all about me. It's not all about what I can get or what I can, you know, the glory I get. It's about what you can give back and how you can make yourself happy and make other people happy, like truly happy. Not just what you can buy, but what you can give, you know. I have no patience for divas and devos, you know. and I tell them that, you know. I tell them that. And I love working with families, and I've just had the blessing of being able to work with some people over time and just seeing them just develop into these, you know, artists and hopefully scholars and cool human beings. And, you know, I just love hearing from them, hearing what they're up to. And some of the folks are in college now, and I'm just so
That's
excited.
Great. Oh, yeah. My gosh. Yeah, because they had a chance to hear somebody like you who gave them the choice of either living superficially or living the lives that they could only dream of before somebody like you came along. So I don't want to pump you up too much, but I'm going to.
Oh. Thank you.
You're welcome. And look, the hour has flown by. Isn't that crazy?
It sure has. Yes.
Gosh, Dawn, I'm so glad you had the time. I really am. I'm glad we got this together. Yay!
Yay, yay. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for bringing me on. Can I just say something about the musicians on the...
Please do.
Okay.
Please do.
Well, the pianist on Something So Ordinary and on Love Will Find You, I guess the track that you're going to play next.
Yeah.
Just a wonderful musician from based in New York. He played with Steve Coleman, and it's another one of those musicians that you just don't put in a box. Just a brilliant musician. Mud Skillings again is on bass there, and there's Mnyongo Jackson, and the next song is just one of those things where I really just kept adding things and just wanted to make it fully my vision of what I wanted it to sound like. So there's a viola player on it, Miriam Blackshear, and violinist Tammy Deshay. Did I leave out anyone? Tony Lewis on drums. My brother.
Your brother?
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry, Michael. My brother Michael, who's singing Gus, do you know how fun it is to work with your brother? And
oh
the funny
gosh.
Thing was, I used when I was a kid, I used to look at, you know, just wish I could be in, you know, on stage in his bands and stuff. They're just, you know, these teenagers practicing in the house, and now it's like, hey, Michael, can you sing on my?
Yes, right.
So that's you know, he's singing with his little sister on there, and so
boy, that's a precious moment, huh?
Woo! Oh yeah, that's just so much fun. So
well, tell us where we can find you, and tell us, as opposed to love, which already has because you did the song, but tell us your website and if we can purchase your music.
Okay, well, my music can be purchased on CD Baby, iTunes, Amazon, and there's a special between July the 30th and August 3rd. If you purchase on CD Baby, I'll actually get 100% of the you know, sales, which is, you know,
wow,
it's pretty unusual. So,
yeah, that's awesome. Oh, that's timely. I'm glad you were on today.
Yeah. So, you know, let's see. Otherwise, my website is dawnnorfleet.com. But for more up to date information, you can catch me on Reverb Nation. MySpace is like the most. I keep that most updated. Let's see. I have a music page on Facebook called Dawn Norfleet Music.
Yep.
So, there are various ways of finding me.
Well,
I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, do us a favor and make sure that you put an event page or a link so that we can I can post on my page that this special is happening with CD Baby so that you get 100% credit on that. And then fans of yours will be able to do that on their pages too.
Okay, a link. I sure will.
Yeah, because, you know, you might as well milk this for all that it's worth. I mean, we're all trying to help one another out here and get a few bucks.
Sure. Absolutely. And please, you know, leave a review. Let me know what you think. That's like fuel for me when people let me know what they think of their of my music.
Awesome.
Or, you know.
That's really a cool thing to suggest. We appreciate that.
So, well, thank you so much, Trish. I've enjoyed my time.
Oh, Dawn, we've enjoyed you. It's really a pleasure to have a bona fide doctor in the house. Mm-hmm. That is all about ethnomusicology. Now we understand a fuller picture of what that's all about. And now, you know, it's really cool to have people know about you, and it's just, talk about networking, it's just a domino effect of, oh, did you hear Dawn Norfleet? Oh, she's awesome. And it just keeps growing and growing, and then, you know, it affects so much positively when people are turned on to an artist like you. So this will hopefully give you fuel to be a better mentor as time goes on, because you're going to affect a lot of people.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate this opportunity. So,
well, we'll have an update in the next few months and find out what's going on.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you so much, Dawn.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you soon, hopefully.
Okay. All right.
Bye-bye. This is Dawn Norfleet, and I want to make sure that you heard this song. This was the first song I heard by Dawn, and I went, whoa, I feel so much better after 4 minutes and 15 seconds. Love will find you. Do you promise, Dawn? From the right now title, Something So Ordinary. Whatever she decides to title it, if she wants to keep that, that's cool. But Love Will Find You is just a little anthem. It's become so for a lot of us on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Ooh, yeah. single fleck of grass and beaches of sand. So I'm searching, yeah. Keep on searching, you'll find that love will find you. Keep on searching. Someone.
Choice. Man, if you don't get your toes tapping to that or something tapping, if the toes ain't working, I don't know what's wrong with you. Steve Oliver on guitar there. My goodness, title track from his beautiful World Citizen CD. My goodness. SteveOliverMusic.com has all you need to know about our Disney boy, because he really is. He is just the happiest man in the whole world. So adorable, so beautiful inside. Oh, you just wonder how on earth he has survived so much to still have that childlike heart that is evident in so much of his music. That particular track has garnered some interest, so much so that I see by his Facebook notation of late that he has been asked to co-host and be the guest artist for SiriusXM Watercolors. Yes, he's getting a lot of attention. He's working on Will Donato's new CD. His grandfather, Steve's grandfather, just turned 100. A lot going on. And I am sure that when we check in with him next, he'll have another full agenda for us. Just love this man. He is a breed apart from artists. He's a breed apart from people. Just very much healing music. We talk about this a lot. Honestly, we can't talk about it enough, because just as Dawn Norfleet said in her interview, she wanted to make music a certain kind of way. And you heard where her heart is coming from. When you hear an artist who really values other people and values the world to make music that fulfills other people's needs, makes dreams come true, inspires them, cajoles them to push forward, any of the above, all of the above, whew, we'll do anything to support you. Seriously. Kevin Tony, another example of that. Oh, what a journey that boy has had. Woohoo! 1994, if you can believe, Kings from Lovescape, yep, pianist, composer, author, so proud of what Kevin Tony's journey has become. You can go to his.com and find out more. The New American Suite is out. Not only that, but Kings of the Evening, the soundtrack to a 2010 film set in a depression, starring Tyson Beckford. Kevin's music is all over that. That's finally out. KevinTony.com has more. And, of course, his virtuous man has done so much
to, here's that word again, inspire men in particular to take that higher road that Dawn spoke of. Kevin has had so many blessings come forth from that book, heartfelt, talking about the breakup of his marriage and getting it back only with God's help, becoming the man that he was always meant to be. Oh, just love it. It's such a major turn on, honestly, that men are getting involved in this whole notion. And I think that that's part and parcel of the reason why there's all this renewed interest in Kevin Tony, to the point where he is now doing a reunion with the Blackbirds on several dates. Again, the website has all that information. It's just really, really wonderful to be able to tell you. Kevin Tony. And listen, I want to tell you about this. Haven't talked a lot, but I will be, about one of our sponsors on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Tara Walker is one of those women that I just love to be able to tell you about. She is one of those entrepreneurs who took nothing and made something out of it, didn't know anything about textiles, and she decided that she was going to learn all she could about the industry. She became immersed in making beautiful embroidered table and bed linens to the point where they were so high school that Neiman Marcus and Saks Fifth Avenue wanted them. So she decided that since in her travels she learned about face care and about different kinds of needs that women had, she saw all of these different elements that she could incorporate into a new line of skincare, including where she was on the Cayman Islands, because that's when she decided to retire to the Caymans. She saw all these oceanic derivatives that are absolutely life sources, and she put them into Tara Walker's Dream, a skincare line, which I'm using now. It has shaved about 5 or so years off my face. I'm not kidding. There's a reason why there's not a lot of pictures on Facebook yet, because I just want to make sure that people understand the before and after pictures. It's really amazing. TaraWalkersDream.com has more. And I'm thinking that maybe it might be a good idea to have her on the show one of these days, just so you can hear her and be absolutely riveted by her story, because this is a woman who puts her money where her mouth is. We need to have more of those people around us, don't you think? And who better to demonstrate that than Joe Sample? Woohoo! Wanted to play this last week, didn't have an opportunity, but I just love the song Street Life when it came out. Are you kidding me? 1979. This was one of those songs that Wilton Felder wrote. Wilton's birthday is coming up in August, and these Crusaders, when they got together, there was a force in them that just staggered the jazz world and beyond, because this was huge on multi-Billboard charts. From Street Life, Carnival of the Night. Get ready for your weekend, will you? On Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
This is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
My sweet, embraceable you. Embrace me, you irreplaceable you. Just one look at you. I love all the many charms about you. Above all, I want my arms about you. Naughty baby, come to mama, come to mama, do my sweet embrace of you.
Can't possibly do it. from the top, we heard the Crusaders, Carnival of the Night, from their astounding 1979 Street Life album, which was the top 20 album on 3 Billboard charts, including disco, by the way. Joe Sample had mixed feelings about that, to be sure. Styx Hooper, Wilton Felder, the whole nine. Beautiful lineup of folks on that particular project. One of our favorites to play, for sure. We heard Terrence Blanchard and Luna Viajera from Wandering Moon. Branford Marsalis on tenor sax. Bryce Winston on tenor sax on this project, as well as Edward Simon on piano, Aaron Fletcher on alto sax, Dave Holland on bass, Eric Harlan on drums. Terrence Blanchard wrote all of the songs except for two in that particular album from back in 2000. Wanted to get a little vibe going on here, a little vibe coming from the Crusaders going into Sarah Vaughan and preparing you for the weekend. And to get you pumped up, just so you know what's happening with Terrence, my goodness, it's so wonderful to see that these unbelievably talented artists are getting to work. We were talking back and forth in the chat room about the Detroit Jazz Festival, and Terrence will be part of that once again. What a lineup of talent they are having in Detroit in August. August? I think so. Sonny Rollins, Chick Corea, Wynton Marsalis, an array that is just confounding. I'm especially turned on about the Preservation Hall Band from New Orleans and a Sunday session with Donald Harrison and Christian Scott. That would do it for me, boy. Anyway, back to Terrence Blanchard. Napa Valley, he'll be playing there. Yoshi's, he'll be coming to D.C. to play Blues Alley. I am not going to miss him this time. And we ended the set with Sarah Vaughan. I wanted to save this story for you just to show you a little magic of what happens when the timing is right on a particular track or tracks of music, when people are assembled that need to be together. Sarah Vaughan recorded this back in 1954. Bob Shad was the producer, originally on MRC, the label. Embraceable You, one of those songs that sticks in your soul and stays there forevermore. Well, they didn't really give any precedence, shall we say, to that particular track. What they had in mind in assembling this amazing array of folks: Paul Quinichet on tenor sax, Clifford Brown on trumpet, Herbie Mann on flute, Joe Benjamin on bass, Roy Haynes on drums. And Jimmy Jones had replaced John Malachi for Sarah on piano. This was the first foray into a studio session with Sarah. Just months earlier, keep in mind, Jimmy had replaced John. And what Bob Shad had in mind was he wanted to make these long-playing 45s. At the time, this was what folks were doing so that there could be jukebox play. So one thing after another happened. They were recording at this beautiful studio, Robert Fine Studio, in the New York City Great Northern Hotel. Robert wanted to have in his studio a minimalist single mic monaural sound, which really has stood the test of time, especially on that particular track that you just heard. Amazing. Well, here's the crazy thing about it. They still had studio time. They came back for another session, and Bob dismissed the crew and just had Jimmy and Roy Haynes and Sarah's voice. So they had about 20 minutes left on the clock, and anybody who has any studio time wants to make the most of your studio time. If you still have time left, let's go for it.
But let's not try to make the mistakes that a large group of musicians can have. Let's just have this little skeleton crew. So they turned what you just heard, Embraceable You, they turned that out in less than 20 minutes. Oh, my God. So when they played it back, Bob said, you know what? Let's just forget about the other tunes that we had in mind. Let's just go with this. Jimmy Jones knew what to do with Sarah Vaughan's voice so much. And Sarah appreciated Jimmy so much. And Roy Haynes on drums. It was just an anointing that day. So beautiful. I mean, I might want to play it again. I'm not going to do it. But if you get a chance to pick up Sarah Vaughan or that particular recording of Embraceable You recorded in Robert Fine's studio, you need to do that because that's the kind of sound. It wasn't appreciated at the time. Remember I said earlier, things aren't appreciated necessarily at the time they were made. But in later years, you go, wow, that was a masterpiece. And it really is. So, enough of your music lesson for today, ladies and gentlemen. It's time to go back. And now that we have a little time, let us play this closing piece, shall we? I'm doing this even though I know that Daoud is mad at me for some reason. It's all right. We go through this from time to time. People do. I'm still going to play his music just to make him mad, even madder. Sorry. Daoud Saeed's Brand New Love is usually the closing piece, and his Mainstream is usually the opening piece. If you want to see more of Daoud's work, he's a little temperamental cuss, but you can find some selections on Reverb Nation. Good luck with the rest of it. Oh! You have a magnificent weekend, and know that Tuesday we're going to take care of biz. You talk about a hybrid act, a gal that we're going to have on Tuesday, and there might be other guests. We're in the process of talking to some other folks. Who knows what's going to happen next week? Cindy Bradley, we know for sure, next Thursday. On Tuesday, Allison Crockett, based in D.C., and she is about as hybrid as any artist that you've heard on this show. Mercy. It's really creative stuff. Just love it. Thank you to all of our beautiful regulars that have shown up today. Griselda and Beach and E and all of our guests who joined especially for Dawn Norfleet. Wasn't she wonderful? You have a blessed weekend. Have a good Thursday night. Make sure you consider tomorrow. Well, actually, consider today, Friday A. That way, tomorrow, Friday, seems like a longer weekend. You know what I'm saying, right? We'll see you on Tuesday. Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. That's the show that you just heard. God bless you all.